Feeling the lanes, crew, the feeling the lanes, crew, the feeling the lanes, crew, the feeling the lanes, crew,
Rick,
the feeling the lanes,
no heart,
crew, the feeling the lanes, crew,
no heart,
feeling the lanes, J, crew, feeling the lanes, J, N, feeling the lanes,
Billy D. Williams,
crew,
feeling
the lanes,
podcast,
crew, Williams,
you know.
I didn't think much about it.
A little bit of social commentary and a lot of fun. What up? What is going on, good peoples? This is the Fill in the Lanes crew, and we are not a made-up collective of people. Actually, and Nick Nohart is not Sarah Phillips.
Ah!
Well, he has been her a couple of times, but that was a whole different... Never mind. Anyway, my name is Rick. I'll be taking you through the show this evening. Got some good stuff to go to talk about with the NBA playoffs going on. I've got the Sixers and the Chicago Bulls game right on in front of me. I think Jay Hinn's probably watching Detroit play. Who's Detroit playing, Jay?
We are playing. We're playing the 88 Lakers. All right, for real.
NBA classics. All right. So without further ado, let's get into the show. Let's start it off with Trill, since we don't know how long he's going to be here. What up, Trill?
What up, man? Yeah, I've been under weather for about a week. Some serious problems, but you can call me Trillium Sonoma. Let that boy cook.
So we call that big bitch weather now. I could have sworn she said her name was Shaniqua in that text, but all right, then.
You know my policy. I don't sleep with black women. Don't play yourself.
Speaking of black women, what up, Nick?
Yo, what up? I'm Nick Nohart. Just trying to let everybody know that it is not good to pretend that you are somebody else on the internet. That's why everybody that follows me on Twitter knows that I am a 6'6", long-haired black man with beautiful blue eyes who grew up in Mexico, man. You know what I mean? And you can hit that donate button whenever you want.
Yes, I saw that photo at the incense stand in Harlem. That's that black Jesus joint.
Hey, Nick, I just want to say I loved you on A Different World. Shaza, that was a great character. and that guffaw you just heard was Big Chi. What up, Chi?
What up? Yeah, Big Chi in the building. Just ready to make this shit happen, man. Let's do it.
All right, and last but not least, the homie Jay Han. What up, Jay?
Fellas, what's cracking? Let's do it.
All right.
See, you can always tell when Jay's ready to get the hell off with the show, so he can get the hell off. If we'd have started about 20 minutes ago, that intro would have been a little bit longer. I see you, Jay. All right, so let's get into the playoffs. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Some good games, bad injuries. Nick, started off, what's caught your eye so far?
Well, I'm going to hurry up and talk about the Knicks before they're out of the playoffs, because they're not going to be in here at the end of the segment. You know, it's obviously just a depressing, demonstrative, debacled mess out there. Getting smoked in the first game is whatever. Having Shumpert go down to an ACL injury is a huge blow to the core of the team, but having Amari Stoudemire attack a fucking fire extinguisher case.
Say it.
Yeah. Y'all are down 2-0 to the Heat and 1-0 to the fire extinguisher.
Oh, man. He couldn't even guard his hand from the glass. I don't know. It's a bad situation, man, and it's embarrassing, and they're going to get swept, and it's not – like, only the Knicks getting swept is not embarrassing enough. Like, only the Knicks can make getting swept out by the Heat even more embarrassing and depressing.
It's always an event in New York, baby.
And J.R. Smith is going to leave, and Steve Novak's going to leave, and this team is going to be like Shumpert, Landry Fields, maybe Jeremy Lin, Amari for the next 10 years, Melo and Tyson Chandler, and that's the roster. And it's just it's not a great situation, man. I hope we offer $50 million a year to Phil Jackson.
And isn't with another loss, the Knicks will break the NBA record for?
I'm pretty sure they already have it. But even if they don't already have a record, don't they have the record for like just sorriest existence on the planet right now? Like, is there like, isn't it better to be a Nets fan right now than it is a Knicks fan? Like, is there anything worse than being a Knicks fan right now?
I don't know about that.
Not with that crayon box ass drawing of a logo.
Yeah, I keep fronting on that logo. I seen mad people rocking that shit already. That black and white.
Of course.
That black and white. I mean, I'm in Jersey. That black and white is going to go with everything.
The Bloods are going to eat well off that, too.
I don't know. But I'm feeling that shit, man.
You think Bloods ain't going to wear that big ass B?
Yeah, they will. They will.
They still have Bloods?
Ooh, yes.
In 2012, there's still Bloods and Crips?
Really? Tupac is back. You saw the holograms.
Oh, shit. My bad. And by the way, just a PSA to all you gentlemen who want to show your outrage and want to have a great display of anger, always aim for the plaster, okay? Don't aim for glass. Make sure there's no beams. Aim for the plaster. You can put a hole in it. People will respect your gangster, and you won't get hurt.
Hey,
trust me.
You think he called it?
Huh?
You think he called glass, though? Yo, but seriously, maybe he was just scared. They were down 2-0. They couldn't stop LeBron and Wade, and that shit said break in case of emergency. You know what?
It's like LeBron's on fire. Let me get this extinction right quick.
I wish they had some clippers in there so you can cut off them fucking cornrows, man. Shit.
Please, yes.
Oh, yeah.
We've always wanted Amari to hit the glass more.
Man.
All right, Jay Hinn, since you gave that terrible one, what have you been checking for?
Actually, I've been
checking.
That's what I thought, for real. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know what? See, look at the white man just trying to bring division between the brothers. Go ahead.
I've been checking out this Memphis Clippers series, which, you know, I thought it was going to be highly entertaining. And it didn't start off that way, but, you know, towards the end, you know, it really came through.
It did.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. In case everybody missed it. But, man, it just shows to me that, you know, I still think that Chris Paul is one of the true leaders, you know, in the NBA. You know, the fact that I just think that he just willed that team to win. I still don't think that over seven game series, they're going to beat Memphis. But, you know, that was a gutty performance. You know, mostly everybody went to sleep literally and figuratively on that game and woke up like, wow, I can't believe that, like, that just happened, where Reggie Evans actually, you know, had a sighting. So that was entertaining. You know, so once again, I'm looking forward to that game.
Reggie Evans back from the dead. Was it a hologram? He had a heart attack, didn't he?
Didn't he grab somebody nuts a couple of years ago?
Yeah, he did. Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
So did Chris Paul, so it doesn't really matter. I was basking in my own, you know, smartness and genius and getting love on Twitter. Rick looks like a genius, yada, yada, yada. Went to bed, woke up the next morning. Say what? Like, you came back from 27 points? Like, I could not believe it. But it just shows that these playoffs are going to be wild. They are going to be wide ass open. Is that Scottie Pippen on the bench? Anyway, go ahead, Trill. I mean, if you had a television in your operating room over the weekend, what were you watching?
Yo, you know, because I'm on West Coast time, I got to see that Clippers game, and I was blown away. I mean, I was casually watching it, of course, because it was like a 27-point game. And I turned around and it was a 15-point game. I was looking at it a little more closely, went and did what I had to do, you know, which actually mostly was nothing since I was stuck in a damn bed. went on the internet, looked back at the damn thing, and it was a 6-point game. And Nick Young went off, and look, the whole team, like the Clippers played great. They looked inspired on defense. They were hitting threes. But that was just a colossal collapse. I don't know what how you get a 26-1 run put on you in the NBA in the playoffs. Like, this is just abominable performance down the stretch.
Hold up, didn't the Knicks get a 32-0 run put on them?
They got two. It was 32-2.
Okay, my bad.
I'm sorry about that, Nick. I wasn't trying to bring that up. I mean,
it's okay, man. It happens. It happens.
But it was a pretty horrible performance by the Grizzlies in the second half, and I just don't believe in this team, man. I know y'all do, but I mean, and the Clippers have so many different issues, but the Grizz, I just think they're weak, man. I think last year they got a good matchup, and this year that good matchup doesn't exist for them anymore. There's not a single team that I think is scared of the Grizzlies, man. Everybody says they're a scary matchup, but I just don't see it. The Spurs would eat that food as revenge this year. It's not the same year as last year. They ain't doing shit.
Okay. Poignant to the port. What about you, Chi?
I've been checking out this OKC Mavs series. It's been a little surprising. Durant really hasn't played that well. I mean, he's shooting 34% for the series. I think we got to give Sean Marion some props. I mean, between last season shutting down LeBron in the finals and what he's doing to Durant right now, he's one of the best defenders that's been in the league in the past 10 to 15 years, no matter how long his decrepit shooting has been in the league. But, you know, he's one of the better defenders that's in the NBA, and he's really caused a lot of problems with Durant. I still want to punch Kendrick Perkins in the face. He gets me on the fucking nerves anytime I see him. But besides that, man, I'm really questioning these late-game decisions that you see, you know, coming down the stretch of these games. Anytime they do a soundbite with Scott Brooks, he is not coaching, man. He's just giving some little rah-rah inspirational tip to Kevin Durant, and he's not actually, you know, diagramming or explaining plays. And, you know, be honest with you, it's been a little bit crappy down the stretch of these games, and nothing is worse than losing a game with a fortunate bounce. When Kevin Durant got that shot, I mean, it was a soft touch, so, it, you know, the shot was a good shot. But that has to be the most defeating thing, just to lose on that. You know, I just thought about the Knicks and the Heat a couple years ago, and Allen Houston hit that shot, and Ralph Sampson did the same thing as the Lakers a few years back. But I think Dallas, they're going to do what they have to do in Dallas, man. I think this series is going to go 7 games, man. So that's been the main thing that I
checked. Can I just correct one thing you said? Nobody has to respect Sean Marion once he got that Demolition Man haircut with the blonde streaks in it. Nobody. I don't care if he D's up Jesus on the cross. He ain't getting no respect.
I actually was shocked Rick Carlisle didn't call a timeout last night. I mean, you know, they come down, they don't call a timeout, and then they get an offensive rebound and still don't call a timeout. I could not believe it.
That was a great pass by Vince Carter, too.
Though. Oh, that was an outrageous pass. Yeah, outrageous, really, an awesome offensive rebound, and then to find him in midair. But, you know, 3-4 seconds left, you call a timeout, you get one of your good shooters open, you run a play, get it to Dirk maybe. I mean, but Jason Terry pulled a 35-footer. Two clean looks, but I just was shocked that no timeout was called there.
Hey, Delonte was playing his ass off last night, by the way.
He really was.
He was. Yeah. He was actually, and Russell Westbrook was playing his ass off for most of the game, and then missed like his last 4 shots down the stretch. And luckily, James Harden was the one getting fouled, so he was able to finish him off from the free throw line.
Yeah, but I thought that Westbrook played under control, though. You know,
he just didn't have a lot of turnovers, right. In the shot clock too, which was kind of tough. But listen, he played great, and you gotta love watching him in the post game interview, because even when he plays well, and they're like clearly interviewing him because he was player of the game, he's still kind of looking out the side of his eyes at the reporter, waiting for them to take a dig at him. Like, he just doesn't trust him. He's just waiting for him to be like, but. And he's just like, yeah,
say,
you know, I'm playing well.
Say something, yeah.
All right. The interview always ends. He's like, all right. And he just bounces. Like, it's always like, oh. And it was kind of awkward, but it is what it is. I don't know. I got a kick out of that. But James Harden played hard as hell. If he could have made a couple of the layups, the driving layups towards the end of the game, he might have taken down the MVP for that game. But
Yeah.
I don't know, man. You know, when a team goes 35 of 37 from the line, that's pretty incredible. That's pretty tough to beat.
So now, and now, excuse me, and now Kevin Durant gets that that clutch moniker put on him, which is something that LeBron's still looking for. And obviously, we've already talked about the Heat. Let's talk about the Lakers. Baby Bynum is beasting again. This might be turning into his team. Maybe no anyone.
Size kills in the playoffs, man. And I thought Memphis was proving that right up until they choked up a 40-point lead. But you know, if they're going to use Pau Gasol and Bynum and let those guys just basically dominate for like 25 or 30 minutes a game together, you can do a lot of work there. It just really is going to be about how committed Kobe is to letting those guys get touches on the inside and working off of it.
Bynum's game, you can see he has a big Pau Gasol has a real big influence on Bynum's game. I mean, anytime he gets a rebound or offensive rebound, he's not bringing the ball down. He does just like Pau Gasol, keeps the ball up and just brings it back up, you know, put to the basket, man. I mean, Paul has a really good influence on his game, man. And
not as much of an influence as Kwame Brown had. You saw. But no, that's a real good point. He's learning. It's amazing to watch a kid that was raw coming into the league. And of course he has been in the league 7 years, but it's just, this is like his breakout season, and I still don't expect him to be this good. And yet every game this year, he's pretty much shown improved. What about you, Jay? Did you get to watch any of the Lakers game?
Yeah, I did. You know, not a lot, but, you know, Bynum really is playing within himself at this point. But you know what though, man? I mean, I still won't give him the best center in the league tag yet, you know, only because, you know, I mean, this is the first year that he's doing it. But, you know, as of right now, you know, like he's the best center, you know, left in the playoffs. And, it's just a lot of length out there, man. You know, between him and Gasol, you know, especially Bynum, I mean, he bothered about 10 shots, you know, and he blocked 10 of them. So, you know, they're a real problem. You know, if they can get anything from their bench, man, you know, they're going to be a tough out. If Kobe feeds them first in the beginning of the game and then try to close it at the end, you know, they're going to be real tough out. But, you know, Bynum is playing well, so I will give him props. But let's see him do it for a sustained period.
Is anybody watching the San Antonio series?
Oh, I do.
Yeah. I love watching San Antonio play basketball, so yeah. But that's the whole season. Yeah. The word professional springs to mind in the best way possible. Like, that is top to bottom just such a professional fucking organization. And I mean, if you don't like Manu's passes, the way Tim Duncan works the post and kicks out, Tony Parker just goes anywhere he wants on the court. The team clicks so well, and just watching their role players every year step up to a bit of a higher plateau is fascinating to watch. Now, am I enjoying that series? No, I'm not enjoying that series.
But I do like watching. But it's crazy. It, like, doesn't make a difference who they put on the court. Like, if you step into Popovich's house, you just fall into the customs. Like, you take your shoes off, you help with the dishes, you know what I mean? You set the table. And like, you wait and you, like, you know, you don't, you know, you chew with your mouth closed. Like, Boris Diaw, fat and sloppy, a complete disappointment on like most levels. Dude comes in, works the high post, is facilitating. Steven Jackson has been basically like on the bench for the last year on two different teams. You know, he was like banished. Nobody wanted to touch him. Greg brings him in and he's just out there, you know, giving him 30 minutes, 14 points. Couple
looking
assists,
like an upstanding
couple rebounds.
Citizen.
You know what I mean?
But
he's helping old ladies cross the street. He's out there cleaning up the boardwalk and the river walk in San Antonio. Like, you know, it doesn't make a difference, man.
But
all
Pop
these dudes
is different, man.
Like, no, I know, it's crazy.
A lot of people didn't know what Steven Jackson had left. Pop has scouts everywhere, so he heard the mixtapes. So he heard that fire and that hunger.
See,
and he was
he's hungry.
Yeah.
So do we take him out of the Golly I'm Gully Hall of Fame since becoming a good citizen?
I don't want to take that.
It's your risk. Yeah.
We'll leave him.
Yeah, exactly. Find out exactly where he's going to be.
Word of idle time and shit is his enemy.
All right. Well, another big story in the NBA playoffs has been knees, as in watching them explode. Non-contact. Shumpert Derrick Rose. I just read that what's his name sprained his knee too, Josh Smith, for
Josh
the Hawks.
Smith just got taken off the court. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh,
with his dumb ass.
I read an interesting article blaming it on the short season. It was by an orthopedist. I don't know if I buy it, but I'm not a doctor. Most of the doctors who like have been referred, but come from a couple different sites, a couple different publications, say that because it's just an acute injury, that you can't really blame it on wear and tear. But I mean, there's something to be said. It's just when a rash of injuries like this goes across, you're always just like, because that completely changes the Eastern Conference playoffs. Like, not so much the Shumpert thing. You know, I would have loved to watch him in the playoffs and guard Dwayne Wade. But
why did you bring Shumpert up in this? Get out of here.
But no, but what I'm saying, I said not so much Shumpert. It's Derrick Rose. It completely changes the landscape of the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he was one of these guys who so tough to guard, can take over games. He's so exciting. And all of a sudden, his team is getting, you know, beaten up by an 8 seed. And that just kind of sucks. Like, makes me wish the Knicks had lost a couple more games and got the 8 seed. Like, it just is, I don't know, it's depressing, man. And you're looking at maybe microfracture surgery for these young guys. It's just a scary process.
Yeah, I had read some of the stuff where people were talking about the shortened season. I'm not going to – not with ligaments because you can't strengthen ligaments and, you know, things like that. I'm going to say that some of the other injuries, like the back injuries, I can see that. You know, muscle pulls, things like that, because it is a lot of wear and tear and the travel and the back-to-back-to-back games and all that stuff. It was just really sad because, like, Derrick Rose – as opposed to, and again, this is a supposition and I'm generalizing based on what I see on the television. I don't really know the dude, but he seems like a genuine dude that really cares. And all he wants to do is win. He ain't trying to make no friendships, create no alliances. He's just going out there playing as hard as he can, you know, and doing his thing. And when they had that picture up on ESPN for like hours of him just laying there, like he had gotten snuffed, you know what I'm saying? It was sad, man. It was really, really sad. Now, the photoshops afterwards of him laying there, those were hilarious. But no, I mean, you're right. It has completely changed the landscape. Like, Philadelphia just hung 36 on Chicago in the third quarter. They're up, what, up 19 right now. You know, and that should never be happening. It has completely taken them out of being a title contender.
And Jrue Holiday's completely beasting. And Derrick Rose, and Jrue Holiday's a great defender. And a pretty phenomenal athlete for like, you know, a guy who's like 6'3", you know, has a long wingspan, gets up and down the court. And Rose puts him on skates and locks him down on the other side.
Yeah.
And now, you know, you're dealing with, you know, hoping Richard Hamilton can score. I mean, right now, Joakim Noah is leading your team in scoring, which I don't even think he did in high school. So that's a bad sign.
Time for Carlos Boozer to step up.
Fucking
Joe. For real. Alright, you signed that fucking max deal. Alright, it's time for your bitch ass to step up.
Why you gotta be a bitch ass though?
Because, man, you know.
No, but I want you to say it again.
Oh, is that wasn't live?
No, okay, yeah, call him a bitch ass.
Say it again. Alright.
Yeah.
We on? Okay.
Yeah.
Step your bitch ass up, man.
There we go. There we go.
No, man. I mean, look, man. I mean, it was a devastating injury. I think that one of the reasons that it's happening like this, number one, is the recovery time. You know, I think Derrick Rose did kind of rush back to, like, you know, try to get back into the playoffs. You know, he had an assortment of injuries this year, and I think he just kind of overcompensated for that. So, you know, there is no recovery time. There's not a lot of practice time. You know, he was trying to rush back. And I think that's what happened with a lot of the players right now. You know what I mean? You know, like their body's just not, they're not used to this condensed schedule, but I'm not going to blame the damn schedule, you know, for all this happening. But I think it does play a factor to it. But
well, you know what? They didn't have to have 66 games.
Right, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? They could have had the same length of season
exactly.
and done 50.
Exactly.
And the Knicks wouldn't have made the playoffs though.
Right.
They
shouldn't have made the playoffs anyway.
Exactly.
I mean, the thing about Derrick Rose, I think I'm like, we have to look at his future going forward. when you looked at like a player like AI or Stephon Marbury, these were guys who came into the league very explosive players, but they made that adjustment where, you know, at some point they stopped dunking the ball, they stopped, you know, just take having so much height on their jump shots in the lane. And with Derrick Rose, I always worried about him. This is a guy that's so explosive. Anytime he takes a shot, I mean, he's like, is it vertical? Like, he's up like 40 inches in the air just to get off a shot. And I've always worried about him landing on someone's ankles or something, man. So he's going to have to really adjust his game. He's going to have to look at how the older point guards did it, you know, and just going forward, man, just not be – he can be as aggressive, but he's going to have to learn to be patient with his game a little bit, man. So, you know.
But he was much more explosive than both Steph and AI. So it's he's even more a danger to himself. But I think people discuss injuries the same way my mom used to discuss letting me drive in cars when I was in my early teens. You know, she'd be like, "Oh, you could get hurt in cars. People get hurt in cars. You know, people get hurt everywhere. They get hurt walking down the street. They get hurt in cars and planes. When it's your time, it's your time." And I don't think it's Derrick Rose's sneakers or the condensed season. I think he is a freakishly athletic, explosive player who makes some seriously rough cuts and stops and jumps. And it's inevitable that some of these players are going to get hurt. And then once they get hurt, we try to retrospectively play the blame game. And it starts getting a little bit silly. The whole Adidas and Nike thing just seems really silly. I'm not saying that it's impossible there's anything to it, but the way people have just been so sure about this, it's kind of offensive to logic.
Well, and that brings us to the next thing.
Yeah, the Nike designer coming out is just so retarded.
Well, and here's the thing. Y'all all know that I'm a Carolina fan. And Carolina wears Nike and Jordan. And ain't nobody had more knee and foot injuries in Carolina. So I don't want to hear shit about Nike making better shoes than Adidas. I'd rather them playing fucking Chuck Taylors than fucking Nike. But it's interesting how I've seen, like, a lot of the articles that mention Jason Petrie, who is the Nike designer. He designed the shoes for LeBron. They go, see, it just seems, maybe I'm being conspiracy brother, that they go out of their way to mention his relationship with LeBron as far as making shoes as if, you know, another way to ding LeBron. Am I reading too much into this, Chi?
No, you're not, man. They're acting as if LeBron is his keeper. You know, I mean, he's his own man. He's his own fool. What bothered me about that tweet is how he tried to really get personal and mention Derrick Rose, Nick's name. Like, he has that sort of comfort level with Derrick that he can talk about him in that way. And that shit was like, it just was a real low blow. You know, he didn't sign with Nike. Move on from it. Why are you even following him and even caring about it to that degree?
You really, you know, misinterpreted that, actually. That's just a white person thing. He was just saying poo like fooey. Oh, poo.
I can vouch for that.
But I mean,
I did not understand that poo. Thank you, Trill. I appreciate the explanation.
It was just real disappointing, though, man. You know, I mean, right now, you just see the climate in sports. I mean, Twitter has, you know, we'll talk about it later, has just really shown the bad side of, you know, people and their thoughts. You know, just keep that shit to yourself. You know, it made no sense, man. You look like a dick, and you know.
The best part is how he was like, "I'm sorry." No, fuck that. I'm not sorry.
Yeah.
Well, he responded to that like when I get in a fight with my girlfriend and I'm like, "All right, yo, I'm sorry. I should have done that. And then like 25 minutes later, I call back and I'm like, "Yo, fuck that. That wasn't my fault. I'm not sorry. Yeah, and I'm standing on it. And I'm not going to dinner with you and your parents. And I'm going to watch the game and don't call me tomorrow."
Yo, but where's the education? Where's the pedigree, man? And I'm talking about your relationship, not the new
story. Exactly. Because we all know that after that game's over and he's about to climb in that cold-ass bed, he's like,
"Baby, I'm sorry. Hey,
baby. You know what? I got a little ahead of myself. I'm sorry."
I usually text her to see, you know, I try to text her like Brett Favre to see if she's in a good mood.
Yeah, Nick here. You up?
Got bad intentions, baby.
It hits her with the "you up" text. That's always
with the education and the pedigree for real. Like, why? This dude is a designer at Nike. I mean, you would think he is presumably a young professional. Like, have we dumbed down the culture so much that everyone everywhere says shit like "haters gonna hate"? Like, what? Yeah. Everyone talks like this now. Everyone,
cool story, bro. I think it's totally fine, man. I got no beef with it. No, honestly, if I'm running a real industry or a real company, like, I wouldn't let anybody have Twitter. Sorry. I understand it's personal or whatever, and you're supposed to be able to, but nah, you can't have a Twitter if you work for me. Shut it down, delete it. No good comes from it.
That's what NYU is doing right now. I think they just made that rule about a week ago with their professors.
Is that not allowed
to have Facebook or Twitter, man. So
if I was a coach, I'd probably do the same thing if I was a coach, man.
Think Larry Brown's gonna let all his new kids when they finally arrive have
no,
Twitter?
They ain't gonna have no damn followers anyway. That's
what Larry Brown looks like. The only shit he knows is a fucking typewriter. Man.
But what's the
regular
what's,
typewriter?
What about the fact that this is a story?
Not even electric.
Like this is what's disappointing to me, is that the social media and the dumbing down of sports journalism has basically like made these things stories. Like, why is Sarah Phillips a story? Why is a guy who works for Nike sending a tweet out about poo a story? Why is Snooki's pregnancy a story? Why is Hulk Hogan's sex tape a story? How come Kim Kardashian is saying she's not the naked woman cooking eggs in a photo circulating on the internet, and that's a story?
Because of ratings. That's why.
I got my computer up. I got the web up. I'm looking at this shit up here.
Cooking eggs? Naked? Anyway, my bad. No, but it's the culture that we live in, and it was birthed by 24-hour access, 24-hour sporting news, and these guys becoming personalities. And a lot of times when there's not a game on, people still want to be entertained by sports and anything that's adjacent to sports. So they're looking for that fix. So if there's not a game on at 12 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday, then we're still going to look for something. We still want to talk sports. And unfortunately, a lot of these knuckleheads are giving us the fodder to talk about it.
Tabloids have been around forever, and I think it goes exactly to what you're saying is, you know, since the Kennedys, since, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, since Abe Lincoln was gay, everybody has wanted to know about the personal life of it.
Did Bill O'Reilly see it?
He was a vampire killer. What the hell are you talking about being gay?
Nah, Rick, he was gay and had a fetish. That's why he freed all them niggas. Oh, I went too far.
Excuse me there, boy. You're looking real good up on that stockade.
Why don't you take them shackles off and put these shackles on?
Why don't you turn around for me?
Yeah. Drop your pants for me, boy.
I can't believe we were going this far, man.
I'm sorry.
I ain't participating.
But that's why, I mean, tabloids have been super profitable and super popular since forever. And eventually that kind of culture just got to sports fans. And we've talked about that kind of stuff all the time on the show, but it just is. People fiend for access. They want to know about your life. And like Rick said, they want to be entertained by you even when you're not on the court. So that's why Brandon Jennings is tweeting out pictures of his tattoo. And that's why, you know, you got TJ Ford telling you he took a dump or like, you know, whatever like retarded shit people do on their Twitter account, becomes
interesting. That's actually called a career retrospective that he was doing.
And this is the remnants of my career.
Yeah, LeBron really did go down like TJ Ford though when he took that pick. That was some bitch shit.
Well, here's the thing, man, and for the longest time, people who watch sports would stand in the line at the grocery counters and turn up our nose at, you know, Us Magazine and all those tabloids. And it just shows that we're just not that, a lot of us are not that different. You know what I'm saying? And that's why, you know, we what we said when we were making that website or doing this podcast is we don't want to be like TMZ. Well, unfortunately, a lot of the sports culture is trending more and more towards TMZ. I don't like it, but I watch.
And we will talk about Brett.
Yeah, we will talk about Brett. And we will talk about Dion.
Yeah.
And all that other stuff. So, I mean, I get it. I'm not exactly proud of it, but
sure you are. Come on, man. Sure you are.
But Brett Favre,
listen to yourself during pregame.
And like,
what are you talking? What do you mean? Listen to during, what are you talking about?
You, Rick, you love this talk, okay? For real. Let's just be honest. All right.
Listen. Okay. Will I watch the Octomom and her masturbation video? No. Probably.
You will?
He said no.
Listen. She had 8 kids. She's gonna be fisting. Come on.
Oh my God.
See.
Oh, wait a minute, man. What? Look, man. Seriously, though, these are, when you talk about like Brett Favre and Deion Sanders, at least these are established athletes who are facing some sort of legal situation that's actual news. The dude on on Twitter who works for Nike is irrelevant in sports in almost every way, man.
Yeah,
true,
Okay. But the Octomom shit is taking it too far, man.
There were a lot of people giving...
Come on, man.
There were a lot of people giving the Yahoo blogs a hard time because they were like, this isn't the kind of thing that should even be publicized because it's not that big a deal and you're going to put this dude's job at risk. Now, in reality, that dude's not getting fired because he designed the LeBron series. But, you know, there's something to be said for that, too. Like, sometimes people are just trolling for news. They need to find it, and they see something like that, and they're like, slow news day, slap it up there. And that's, like, a very real part of it also.
Well, and listen, let's not act like we don't do it for Get In, Get Out.
Oh, yes.
You know what I'm saying?
I have a whole segment for it, a legendary segment. Okay?
Yeah.
World famous.
And that's exactly how you should treat this shit. Relegate it to some quick quips. And for humor only, dog.
True. There you go.
Hell yeah.
Well said, Trill.
So now
stick it up,
we're gonna give the homie Chief some props because, and he just said it really briefly, you know, didn't really pounce on it or whatever, but he did mention the fact that when the Players Association, Players Union, asked Derek Fisher to resign, that there had to be more to it because Derek Fisher wanted them to open up the books and audit it to see where all the monies were going. Well, so does the federal government because it seems like Billy Hunter, who brushes his hair backwards, was funneling money to, what was it, his son? What was it, Chi? Go ahead. Talk on it, Chi. I'll let you.
I believe it's his son, his nephew, it's probably his third fucking cousin and shit, man. I mean, he was funneling money to everyone, man. But, I mean, what it comes down to, if you're a Washington Redskins fan, you're probably pissed off that Kyle Shanahan has a job as an offensive coordinator because he's working under his father, and he sucks. You know, this isn't new. It's the American way. What Billy Hunter did is not unusual. I mean, Ulysses S. Grant, former American president, appointed 30 members of his family into the government. You know, they all got government jobs, man. So, I mean, this shit is as old as apple pie. But, you know, I'm glad it was brought to light. The NBA players, I look down at the NBA players at this because they allowed this shit to happen. You know, Billy Hunter, I think he's the highest paid union rep in all of sports. You know, I mean, like double the pay to the next guy. You know what I'm saying? I don't think, what's the brother's name with the NFL Players Association?
Upshaw?
The dude who looked like I forgot.
Yeah, Upshaw.
I think he only earns like $700,000 a year doing his job, man. So, you know, Hunter's making money hand over fist. And the players allowed it to happen, you know. And right now they've all had this epiphany like, hey, you know what? You know, maybe we need to take a look at these books. You should have thought about that while you were in the middle of the lockout, man. These things should have come to pass already, man. So, you know, I'm glad Derek Fisher, you know, he deserves a pat on the back. You know what I'm saying? He's looking really good because of this, man. And, you know, when you're dealing with people in power, if it's going to be all of a sudden they all just turn around and collectively vote on one accord, we have to also look at the executive committee too. You know, it goes beyond Billy Hunter's family, you know.
Now, did you come with a historical mapping of nepotism? You went back to Ulysses S. Grant.
Nepotism. But that's just the American way. I just don't want people to all of a sudden think that what Billy Hunter did is brand new. You know what I'm saying? Shit like this has been going on for years, man. But props to Derek Fisher, man.
Yeah. So Hunter's daughter, Robin, is the director of player benefits. She gets $83,000. His daughter-in-law, Megan Inaba, is NBAPA's director of special events and made $173,000. Todd Hunter, his son, is a principal at Prim Capital. The Players Association paid them $576,000. His daughter Alexis works for the firm that they hired to represent him. So all in all, the union paid $4.8 million to Hunter's family members and their professional firms since 2001.
Mm-mm-mm. But you know what, man? And I was just having this conversation with another dude. We were talking about television, and there's a new show out called Girls, and I know someone who writes for him. She's one of the dumbest people I've ever met in my life. And he was saying, well, you have to be smart to write on a show. I said, well, that's not true. And he was talking about the difference between intelligence and success. And I think what I was trying to hammer home to him was that I remember in college when I worked security sometimes for social events, like obviously a few of my homies were going to get in, you know? That's how super wealthy people do with real deal huge decisions in the real world. They're like, yo, I got to let five of my homies in real quick. And this isn't surprising at all, this Billy Hunter thing. And it's one of the worst things about America, but, I mean, you know, if you're not keeping your eye on it and you're letting it happen, then who is it on? Because the issue was raised during a meeting by a former player, you know, who was on his way out the door. And I can't remember if it was Pat Garrity or someone else. And I feel bad because I feel like I just did some racist shit and I was just like, well, it was one of those white guys. You know, might as well have been Austin Crozier. I don't know who it was. Yo, I always had a lot of love for Austin Crozier for some reason. But someone did bring this to their attention, and he was escorted out promptly. No one commented on it, and no one really followed up. So I was just like, wow, I was curious that Derek Fisher's not following this up until after his shit is on the line, because I'm sure he didn't just get this information. So it's all a political game. It's very interesting, though.
What about you, Nick?
Yeah, I think that was the perfect analogy. I mean, it does feel very much like a corrupt politician, you know, minus like the latent homosexuality or the dick pics. It's very, you know, putting people on, appointing them to positions and getting people paid, getting people to invest in his son's bank. I mean, it just seems like, you know, it makes me wonder what the room was like when Pat Garrity was trying to bring it up and he was getting screamed at and shouted down and nobody raised a hand. Nobody tried to speak up to his defense. Like, I can't imagine. That's Billy Hunter's theme song right here.
Just randomly throwing in music.
But yeah, was that a Nate Dogg hologram that just came out?
Real time, sir. Real time.
Hey, but Nick, you know, the fascinating thing for me is that everyone is in league, and that's the problem. Everyone's complicit, even the people who finally bring this sort of thing to light. Because you know that room was full of tension and people worrying about their skeletons in their own respective closets when it was brought up then. And I think about how criminal this is. If I hit somebody over the head and took a purse, I would do time in jail or be on probation. And this shit goes down every day, this sort of behavior. And rarely does anyone see any sort of penalty. And when you're dealing with that much money and that much corruption, this is a much worse sort of crime. Forget it. I'm about to go on a long-ass rant about how much I hate America. I'm done.
No, it's cool. I mean, first of all, financial crimes is like the least punished crime on the planet. You know what I mean? So, and this is a prime example of that because there's so much cronyism involved and so much plausible deniability. It just eventually people just get fired and laid off and that's it. And people don't get pursued. They don't pursue legal action. And, you know, there's a very good chance that after all this, like Billy Hunter probably won't even have a threat of jail time because he wasn't really embezzling money. He wasn't really stealing. He was just kind of guiding it to people that he trusted and putting people that he trusted on jobs with him. And that's how this shit goes down. And, and I mean, good for Derek Fisher for stepping up and saying, let's audit that shit. And then this dude is hitting threes last night against the Mavs. And that was pretty awesome also. So, you know, that's pretty badass. I do love the fact that they try to discredit him too right away. And tried to paint him as the guy that like cost players billions of dollars in the negotiation, as if Derek Fisher is the lawyer in there negotiating deals. It's crazy, and that's the kind of propaganda that gets tossed around when there's big money involved. I mean, this was a business crime. This was a business issue.
Well, speaking of nepotism, since I performed some at the beginning of this podcast to when we first started, Jay Hinn. What do you think about it?
I just want to say that she is our Elliot Ness. All right, for real. Just want to give him big props for bringing this subject to light. And also, you know, it is very reassuring for Derek Fisher, the fact that he is standing up to this. You know, to me, it shows a lot of character, shows a lot of leadership as well. You know, so, you know, like I said, congrats to damn Derek Fisher. You know, I really like
news.
What?
He also just burned down Tyler Perry's studio in Atlanta.
Oh, damn it. Why would you? Yeah. I was trying to save that, damn it.
No, so now, when do we give Derek Fisher a damn holiday then? All right, for real. Is today Derek Fisher holiday if he did all of that today? All right, for real.
Hey, whoever burned down that that studio needs a damn holiday or a memorial on Stone Mountain or something.
Shout out to Left Eye.
Wow.
Speaking of holograms.
Oh no! Did you hear that they're talking about going on tour?
Obviously, yeah. That's why I made the reference.
Are you serious?
Jesus. Well, because I knew Jay Hand hadn't, because he's not really
on the internet.
Yeah, this is his quota. Sorry. All right, so let's move on to the what? What?
That's my quote.
That's his quota. That's my quota.
Speaking of NFL, the draft. What round is it tonight?
It's the 25th, and I think the Expos have the first.
Jesus, that shit is fucking interminable.
It's pi square, all right, for
good
real.
Good Lord.
That's what it is.
I mean, listen, props to the good father, Roger Goodell, for understanding that there are people that care this much, and they will put it on prime time for just the first round, and then prime time for the – I mean, it just went on and on and on. And I know that there are people who have watched, you know, all of it. Like Jay Hinn used to watch all the time. I never got it. So instead of making this podcast interminable and talking about all of the picks, just kind of let's just go around the room and, you know, talk about what your team did. And if you want to talk about somebody else or a surprise pick or whatever – we can do that. So we'll start with you, Chi.
Fuck Bill Belichick and the Patriots. They did a good job, but fuck them anyway. But, you know, I've been turned off by this whole Jets thing. I had an invitation to the Jets draft party. I didn't fucking go. I'm really not impressed with the pick they got out of Carolina. Copels, you know, I don't think he's gonna be that great a pass rusher. And I hope to be wrong about it, but, you know, I wasn't happy with that, but we did get a good pick in the second round. We made up for it in drafting Stephen Hill. We at least, if anything, he can just stretch the field for us. We do need that. We didn't have anybody in the receiver position to handle that for us, so he can stretch the field for us, which is a good thing. I'm intrigued by the third round pick, DeMario Davis. He's a speedster. We have no speed at linebacker, so that was a good pick. You know, I think that was a really, really slept on pick. You know, I mean, he seems like he's going to be pretty decent, man. But as far as the draft, man, I'm just turned off by this football shit because of what the Jets did, man. So, you know, I'll be back on the fold at some point.
Are you talking about Tebow? Is that what the Jets did? I mean, is that what turned you off or what?
Way to
turn that knife, Rick. Our
Lord and Savior pump blocker. I mean.
Since Chi is so mad, I think I need to bring up my homie Brian Anger. Yeah. The punter taken in the third round, the highest a punter's been taken in years.
Jacksonville Jaguar. Well, I mean, here's the thing. When you have Blaine Gabbert at quarterback, you got to draft a punter high.
I can't believe that that Borat drafted that dude. But seriously now, I see the draft grades that ESPN did, and like, you know, in the first round, a lot of people are like 95, 94, 93, whatever. Then you get to the third round, and they're like in the 80s, somewhere in the 60s, 70s. Dude's grade is a 31. why did they draft the punter that early? I was excited about that, and of course I was disappointed. I'm excited to talk about it. but I can't believe they didn't draft Golden Arms, Kellen Moore. You know, I understand, but he's going to be the greatest quarterback of all time someday.
Okay. All right, what about you, J-Head?
Well,
did y'all draft a therapist for old boy?
Oh, we didn't get a therapist, man. Lions, I thought, did a decent job. I really liked the first pick, Riley Reiff, you know, who kind of fell down. You know, he was really supposed to go in the top 10 to 15, and they wound up going like 24, which is pretty good. I was kind of shocked that they got Ryan Broz, the wide receiver from Oklahoma, with their second round pick. You know, only because he's coming off the ACL, he's kind of a smaller receiver. I didn't think that that was a need. But, you know, I like, you know, I'm always trust my man Mayhew at this point. He kind of knows what he's doing. You know, then they went with a, I mean, he must have spent.
Black Wes Welker.
He must have spent all his time in Oklahoma, Chi, because, you know, the Lions drafted three players from that team. Ronnell Lewis, Travis Lewis, and Ryan, you know, so it was a decent draft. I do want to give props to a couple of teams. I think Ozzie Newsome did a tremendous job in maneuvering the draft. That's a general manager that I don't think gets a lot of respect. He doesn't get a lot of credit either for building a team, building a culture of what he's done down in Baltimore. He's a tremendous general manager. All
right. They picked up Courtney Upshaw, right?
They moved down and picked up Courtney Upshaw.
That was a great move, man.
Exactly. So he's a fantastic general manager. And this pains me to say, and, you know, the counselor, if you're going to listen, I can't stand that this is going on. But the Philadelphia Eagles also had a tremendous draft.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they addressed a lot of needs. They went a lot on defense, getting Fletcher Cox, Kendricks, Vinny Curry. You know, they did a tremendous job. And last but not least, the Cincinnati Bengals. The Cincinnati Bengals.
Yes.
Actually were alive during the draft. Now, it seems like they took Mel Kiper's best available player every round.
Every single time.
Every single time. but they got good value. They went offense defense a lot. They did a tremendous job. For it seems like 2 years in a row that Cincinnati is building their teams through the draft. You know, so you got to give props to it. Now they're pretty much cheap as fuck, but
that collective bargaining agreement is going to change that.
And that's what happened. A lot of teams was moving up because it wasn't costing you an arm and a leg anymore. So Cincinnati Bengals, man, you got to give them props. As of right now, you know, looks good on paper.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
what about you, Nick?
The Cincinnati Bengals really impressed. Philadelphia drafted well. The Cowboys jumped up and got Claiborne, which was kind of a big move. Teams I don't like really had big days, man. New England did the same kind of stuff. The Giants, I thought the Giants had a strong draft. I was very surprised, especially because the Giants are a best player available team. And Jerry Reese obviously is like the GOD. But they took a running back in the first round, which I think is very telling. I think they're very nervous about Ahmad Bradshaw's durability. And they won't say it out loud, and they won't say, you know, the dude misses 3 or 4 games every season. So to go running back first pick, I think shows you that it was a concern. And now they're backpedaling like, oh yeah, we don't know. It's best player available. We really like Doug Martin. We don't know that we would have taken Doug Martin. I think the Buccaneers kind of fucked them by jumping up and grabbing Doug Martin right before them. But after that, I thought they had a big draft. I think Randall out of LSU is going to get minutes and push for playing time. They're going to want him split out wide to keep Victor Cruz in the slot. I don't know a lot about Hosley from Virginia Tech, just that I know that he's a nickel corner. My guy that's from Virginia Tech says that he's a good cover man, probably not big enough to start, but can definitely play in your nickel and dime packages. I like Mosley also, who was all SEC second team, one of those big, strong guys who, like, you know, doesn't really start playing football till his second or third year and starts for 2 years. He seems like a beast and he can be usable. And they need bodies on the line, which is kind of awesome. And they went out and grabbed a tight end too, who's developmental and can catch passes. He was, I think he was the Cincinnati. Did I make that up? I have to look it up. But he's the Cincinnati tight end. He caught like 12 passes, but 39-inch vertical, you know, 6'5", 6'6", 255, 260. I mean, you know, guys who are big and can run, and they got the best tight end coach in the game. So I think that they all of a sudden shored up some holes. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, we came off a Super Bowl, so I'm not going to sit here and bitch. Also, the Vikings had a really good draft. Khalil is a – yeah, you know, I like the offensive lineman they took. Khalil, I don't want to say his name wrong, Matt Khalil. Harrison Smith seems like a strong pick. I like Jarius Wright late also. I thought they had a pretty decent draft.
Yeah, they needed to get some linemen. Remember we talked about it last year, man, how McNabb and company were getting laid on their back order friggin' time, man. So
The teams left me scratching my head. I wasn't so sure about the Denver picks. But after Elway got rid of Tebow, I'm kind of on board with pretty much every move he makes. He seems like he knows what he's talking about, so I'll ride with him. Got the Bengals impressed. The Bears had a super mediocre draft. And then shout out to Carolina Panthers for taking my man Luke Kuechly. They had a big draft, and they took Luke Kuechly, who is a monster and is as fast as some of the safeties that were drafted.
Yeah. He's going to learn from Benson a lot.
Man. Oh, yeah.
They're going to love him at Carolina, too.
Oh, they're going to go crazy. Really,
he's going to be a fan. He's going to be a fan favorite.
He's going to be favorite. And he's the kind of dude, like, you know, I mean, you know, and I don't want to come across as racist, but you got a star white linebacker on defense and a star black quarterback on offense. You have two dudes you can put up in all your ad campaigns. It was smart drafting, man. And he's fucking really good.
Hold on.
I just heard of Ebony and Ivory playing.
Nick, you're missing the most important piece of that puzzle. Because straight out of Midwestern State, which is a college that you'd hear on He Got Game or Blue Chips.
Yep, big state, yep.
We got us a big Samoan, baby.
He is massive, too. All right.
6'4", 311.
That's massive.
Amini Salatolo.
The job.
Yes.
That is mandatory. The Jets got two of them. Shit.
All of a sudden, it's the auction. It's the slave auction. Man, I got me a couple. How many did you get? I'm going back next week.
Nothing beats the Cardinals grabbing a tight end off of, like, the cubicle for, like, Bear Stearns. There's nothing like that, man. That's still my favorite offseason pickup so far.
I'm surprised the Giants picked the tight end. I thought Marcellus Bennett. I thought he's gonna blow up.
Well, I think because the other two tight ends blew out their ACLs. You know what I mean? Like they were playing in the NBA playoffs. So I think that they were just, you know, they just figured he's athletic and he's strong. We can teach him to block. They're gonna put him out there.
Well, you know, as a Jets fan, I'm always gonna look at the Giants as big brothers and models of what the fuck we should be fucking doing. Which is another reason why I couldn't watch the draft. Fuck.
Nick, I need you to do me a favor, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Knowing the demographics of our listeners, you might want to explain what Bear Stearns is.
Oh, I work there. Bear Stearns is like, it's like the Dr. J's for the stock market.
Okay.
Yeah. There we go. And I worked there. I worked in the credit derivatives division, which took down the company.
Oh, that's nice work.
Yes. Thank you.
The Hulk leaving destruction in his wake.
Damn.
All right, so I'm going to we were going to do Get In, Get Out, but I think let's do something a little different. Yeah, we got some time. Before we get into Get In, Get Out, everybody's seen that Shaq commercial of his squeezing his big ass in that fucking Buick LaCrosse, knowing that ain't no Buick LaCrosse that you buy gonna have the seats to slide back that goddamn far. Alright. But he was rocking his sweater vest. Shout out to TK from the Hot Firestarters. So let's go around the room and talk about some of the most embarrassing or worst commercials that we've seen from an athlete. Well, I'm saving Cheese because I swear to God I still don't believe Cheese. Let's start with you, Nick.
I mean, one of the worst commercials I ever saw, and I saw it through, like, a large portion of my childhood, was that New York Knicks WizBucks commercial that Trill and I were talking about. Mm. I mean, you're talking about a team that was, like, full of heroes of mine because I was young and impressionable, didn't know any better. And they're just on there with, like, and now you watch it and you're like, oh, my God, the haircuts are atrocious. The facial hair is abysmal. And they're in there throwing coupons in the middle of a poker table. I was like, how did this happen? It was... It was one of those. I mean, you know, there were so many good commercials that we grew up with that were so entertaining, and you know, but that one was just so disrespectful. It looked like it was taped on a handy cam that you had to like pop the tape out of the side. And I don't like everything is like a weird red color. It was just, I don't know. It was really uncomfortable.
All right, what about you, Trill?
This is tough. My instinctual go-to is the Patrick Chewing commercial, but people actually love that. But when Patrick Chewing came out talking about "Hi, Brian," and he looked like a homeless man in a Modell's jersey, and then his fat ass dunked on that kid. I just thought it was the worst commercial ever. But my runner-up, I sent to Chi, but we probably can't play the rap on air. But it's a 1989 commercial where Ronnie Lott, among other people, is busting a rhyme real quick, and that shit. It's pretty horrendous if you look it up. Just look up worst sports commercial ever on YouTube and you'll find it.
Was Ronnie Lott, was it a commercial about orthopedic surgery?
Dude, he should have had his pinky cut off after he kicked that 16.
All right, Jay here, what about you?
I'm going to go real recent, man. I'm going to go Charles Barkley getting his Tyler Perry on. All right, dressing up like a woman on that Weight Watchers commercial. All right. Don't we have enough of this, man? Must every black celebrity put on a fucking dress? All right. First Big Mama now this.
Do it in the privacy of your own home.
Exactly. I don't care how much Weight Watchers is paying.
Does LJ fit into that? Are we talking like
No. Hey.
LJ.
Hey. I have got the hang up button on both of y'all.
This is why I'm asking, because LJ was the gangster shit, and I had those cons with the React Joe.
It was cool, though. It was cool. That was different. That was
okay, cool. Let's make it short. That's all I wanted to know.
He did in a cool way.
Sometimes, you know, I just think white things, and I don't, you know, nobody is.
No, it was cool. It was nice.
Here's the thing.
We had to correct you on that. Yeah,
it's his dressing up like a woman worse than him wearing them black ass leather pants in the new commercials. he's dressed up like himself, but he's got on black leather pants or some pants that have a little bit too much sheen.
Sound like you got a fucking frog in his throat.
Yeah, y'all couldn't have delayed the commercial till he got over his little allergies.
wait, watch this go.
Sounded like Phil Jackson or Tom Thibodeau. All right, so as far as mine, like anybody who's from the DMV would know about the Eastern Motors commercials from Maryland, where they get all like the stars from all the sports teams, and they all like rap or sing or whatever. It's Coonan personified. So if you haven't, just go on Google and Google Eastern Motors commercials. Hilarious. But other than that, I'm going to say that Mary J. Blige with the crispy chicken. And I know that she ain't a sports star. I don't give a damn. I don't give a damn because I was actually hoping that Trill would start break out into the melody, but he won't do it. You ain't going to do it for me, Trill?
Hello, Trill.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
What's
anyway.
The crispy chicken wrap? Right.
Mary. All right. Go ahead, Chi. Tell them about yours.
For me, it's a Maytag commercial. They had an oven that cooked twice as fast, so they decided to have a woman who was cooking a family meal to race against Michael Johnson, who was at a track, and at the finish line, there was a white family seated with the Maytag man who raped Dudley at the bicycle shop.
I'll believe none of this shit.
So Michael Johnson runs to the family. You know, he sits down at the table, and there's a big piece of chicken. So he reaches for the chicken, and the Maytag man goes, Michael, you didn't win this one, and hands him a chicken leg. And he just stood there with the big-ass Eddie Murphy smile. He ain't say a fucking word through the entire commercial and got handed a fucking chicken leg. Motherfucker, Jesse Owens raced horses, so you wouldn't have to do that shit. You know what I'm saying? How you gonna hold your head up high? You fucking running for some chicken.
Hold on, now, Chief. If he'd have got the breast, would that have made it a little bit better if he'd have got the big piece?
The chicken had to be like 30 pounds. He gave him this big-ass drumstick, man.
No, we don't mess with the drumstick.
And he smiled, man. He just smiled. Ain't say a word. All he did was run and smile the entire commercial, man. That shit just pissed me the fuck off, man.
And it was at that point in G's life where he said, damn it, no more.
Set me free.
Give
me free shit.
What the fuck?
Nick.
Goddamn shit.
Nick.
Yeah.
When your father put that story up on the board for that commercial, did he really think Michael Johnson would do it?
No, he didn't. It was crazy though, because initially had him in. He was going to be running down in the stocks. You know what I mean? He had the.
All right, eject, eject.
That's enough.
All right, so since we have lost Trill, damn it. All right, let's get into some world-famous get in, get out. Y'all ready?
Yes, sir.
World.
Crispy chicken.
Fresh lettuce. Black people. Gonna smack it with your big lips. Something like that. Just caught me so far out.
For the back of your neck. All right, so first get in, get out. Joel Ward in hockey. Is this our first time talking hockey?
Yes. Yeah.
It might be.
No, so, yeah.
We've talked about punters like four times. We've talked about hockey. Right.
We've never talked hockey.
Well, you know what? We are showing our diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey fans are some racist motherfuckers. No, seriously, Joel Ward, he of African American descent, scored the game-winning goal for the Capitals, and it eliminated the Bruins. Game 7, highly contested game. And then Boston Bruin fans lost their damn minds, especially on Twitter. We talked about Twitter. It's a great tool, but sometimes people get a little crazy. At Tom Troy 12 wrote, the fact that a nigger scored the winner goal makes this loss hurt a lot more. Bagos underscore 8 said, Joel Ward, you're a nigger. Holtby, get a life. I never want to see Tim Thomas in a Bruin jersey ever again. And they just kept going on and on and on. To the Bruins' credit, they did issue a statement condemning the behavior. The owner, Ted Leonsis from the Capitals, called it keyboard courage and ignorance. So, Jay-Hen, mm-hmm. What was your reaction when you heard about all that stuff?
Kind of shocking. You know, because, you know, I have, you know, grown up in Detroit, you know, I have gone to a few Red Wings games and, you know, I never experienced, you know, any of that type of racism like that, you know, especially growing up in that city, you know, I mean, they're known for their hockey, but, you know, I mean, to be honest, hockey fans do take this shit very, very seriously. And I am kind of shocked that it was that blatant racism, you know, that pretty much came about. The fact that they weren't going to celebrate the fact that, you know, Mr. Ward did this, you know, and the fact that they want to say all those racist taunts about him, man, it's kind of fucked up. And it just goes to show you that, you know, there are some faction of hockey fans that not quite ready for us African Americans to invade their sport and, they let their feelings known about it. For real.
All right, so Nick, to be honest, there's this section of fans in every sport, in every fan base. Does that make this any less, like, I won't say shocking, because, I mean, we know it's there, but, like, just, I guess, shocking to see so much of it. Did I lose Nick, too?
No, I'm here. Oh. I'm here. It's
that was
tough
an extra
because,
long pause, Nick. That was
yeah,
a real
no,
long
Yeah, no, I'm sorry
pause.
About that. It was real pregnant. Well, here's the thing. Is I was just trying to delete all the tweets that I had sent out calling Joel Ward a nigger. So,
oh, he said it.
I got the carpal tunnel that day, man, from switching Twitter accounts and sending all those tweets. I don't – listen, man. There's twofold. One is that anonymity is the beer muscles of the internet. And anonymity is beer muscles of cowards in general. People, you don't think anybody will find out who you are. You think you're untouchable, so you can say the most vile things on the planet. And people have done it over emails. People have done it with notes in people's lockers in high school. I mean, people have just always done that shit. Like, horrible people say horrible things to other people when they don't think they can get caught. So that's on a baseline. Now, unfortunately, and this is not just Boston, but in Boston, there is a latent racist element. And whether it comes from, you know, the kind of Irish Catholic, you know, sect, or like the general waspiness of like the New England area or whatever it is, there is a very racist element to Boston. And I'm not just talking about school busing and stuff like that from the 70s and 80s. I'm talking about right now, it's there. And when I went to Boston College, I have never been as shocked in my life as I was when I was like 18 or 19 years old. I was a sophomore. I was playing basketball with a bunch of guys. We had just played at intramurals. We're leaving after running a bunch of guys off, running a bunch of wins off. It's five of us, and we just happen to be five white dudes. And we just happen to have just beaten a team of five black dudes, which to me is no big deal because I've been giving black dudes 40 points a game since I was like 8. But we, you know, we, in all seriousness, we're walking home, and it was friends of mine, and you know, one of them so casually just said, "Man, there's nothing like beating a bunch of niggas in a basketball game," and said it so cleanly, so casually, like it was nothing. And I just turned on my heel and walked home. And I never saw the dude the same way. I was shocked. And not just that there's racism out there, but just at like an academic institution, you know, that there would be somebody that would just say that. And it doesn't make a difference, man. People, there are ignorant people out there everywhere. And they say it when they get comfortable. You know what I mean? And it just is, it's just crazy. And Boston has that element. Philadelphia has that element. You know what I mean? As far as two places in the Northeast where you don't expect to see it because it's quote unquote the North. But let me tell you, man, Boston is the Alabama of the Northeast. Mm-hmm. And I saw and heard some things just being around the Boston College campus that I was so appalled by. And that's just at Boston College. That's not Southie. That's not the areas outside of Dorchester and Roxbury and Charleston. I mean, and that's not even going into Western Mass, which is basically the Midwest in a lot of ways. It was really crazy. And I'm sorry I took up so much time to see it, but that just, as soon as that happened, I happened to be on Twitter when that game was won, and I was kind of trying to keep up with who was tweeting about it, and it started popping all over Twitter. And it just brought me back. Like, that's a very visceral memory of mine. And it's something you just don't forget. And it's a shame, and it's terrible, and those people should all be sterilized. But it's also, listen, you're a black dude and you play hockey, people have been calling you the N-word and various other forms of it probably since you were like 12 or 13, to your face, behind your back, and around you. And maybe we just finally got a little bit of taste of what he sees every single day.
Well, let me tell you something.
What about you?
That's why my son is playing lacrosse. My son is fucking playing baseball. You know what I'm saying? He's going to play all these friggin' sports that I know is just going to make them mad. You know? So, fuck it. But, you know, what Jay Hens said, that Detroit is known for their hockey. Well, Boston is known for their schism. So, you know, I am not surprised to hear that type of talk coming out of Boston fans or just people from Boston in general. I don't like the city. It's one of those underlying things that's been a problem with that city. You know, people try to claim, oh, you know, the Celtics, they have an all-black team. The problems aren't there anymore. Fuck Boston. You know what I'm saying? That problem has always been there. I'm not surprised at what happened. You know, Nick talking on his experience, I have a couple of other friends who have their own experiences being in the Boston area. You know, my wife went to Andover. She's had friends who had problems there. You know, so, you know, honestly, I'm not surprised, you know, but, you know, it is what it is. And as you know, those cowards on Twitter, they all deleted their Twitter accounts. You know, they don't want to show their faces. And I think Suncat was on Twitter about to go hunt one of those dudes down because he was a little bit visible, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, he's going to get his. But, you know, it is what it is. And I think when Rod was a guest here, we talked about it a little bit, man. I've just seen an anger you know, coming on the internet as of late, man. There's a lot of angry white folks out there, man. And it's, you know, I don't see other groups acting like that on the internet collectively and going on sites like Twitter, or New York Times, and, you know, even like credible websites, the comment section of New York Times getting down like that, man. And, you know, it just speaks on the sad race relations that's going on in this country right now, man. And, you know, outside of Nick, man, white folks, they got to look in the mirror, man.
Outside of Nick. All right, next get in, get out. Mr. Brett Favre is in the news again. He is going to have to testify because Christina Scavo and Shannon O'Toole, he sent them their two massage therapists or masseuse or whatever they want to be called, chicks that rub. Allegedly, the quarterback sent suggestive texts and treated them like a hanging slab of meat. And guess what? They have one of the alleged texts here in the article. You ready, Chi?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead. I'm going to quote it for y'all.
Are you lonesome tonight?
Hey, Brent.
Do you miss me tonight?
You and Chrissy want to get together?
Are you sorry?
I'm all alone. Kind of lonely tonight. I guess I have some bad intentions.
Does your mammal
That was pretty awesome.
So here's the thing, J-Head. Can you kind of give him a pass because he's trying to hook up a threesome with two massage therapists?
I'm gonna tell you something.
What?
If me and my homies ever be a bunch of white dudes playing hockey, I'm gonna let the whole place know. I'm gonna say that's right. You crack a motherfucker, all right?
Detroit, what? Detroit, wild out. MLK, fools.
MLK, fool. For real, represent.
Okay. All right, Nick. What do you think about the text messages?
I think out of all these sexual escapades, scandal, embarrassments that's happened in sports, I think the most disappointing part of it all has just been the absolute lack of game. Like between Tiger, you know, Anthony Weiner, Brett Favre. These guys just are hitting girls up with like the, yo, you around? Hey, you wanna come see me? Like, this is the most pathetic. You guys are powerful white men, which means you are the most powerful men in America. Like, you should be able to holler at a chick with something a little better than like, hey, you guys want to get together and come on over? That's pathetic shit. Like, that's what I and other 18 and 19 and 20 year olds have said to other girls at bars when you're blackout and you know you're not seeing anybody and you're just trying to like get some laughs out of your friends. That's not what you say to people really as a human. Like, it's just pathetic, man. And like, it's just the latest in his like long string of incompletions at the end of his career.
Hold on, Nick. Here's the thing though, Nick. I'm going to say this. I had a friend, a black friend of mine, and we used to go to the bars in Atlanta, and his line to every white girl for years was, and he'd look at her with this creepy-ass look and say, you ever been with a black guy before? Literally would say that. So it's not just them.
No, I know it's not just them. I just feel like you got to have more in your bag of tricks. Like, you gotta have more clubs in your bag than just, hey, you wanna come over and have intercourse? Like, it's fuck. Making us look bad, man. Like, I gotta think that if I get to a certain level of echelon of richness and power, then I'm just gonna be able to, like, throw some game at people. And it turns out that I'm gonna be just as fucking corny no matter how rich and famous I get.
Just follow Derek Jeter. And all will be well.
I'm trying, man. I'm trying.
I mean, can we be surprised that Brett Favre will be the least sophisticated in his approach? I swear to God, he probably made that tweet after, you know, wiping his hands off some fucking grease and fucking fixing his car and shit. You know what I'm saying? He seems to be the type that, you know, he probably try to fuck a chick and don't even shower afterwards, man. So I ain't surprised. Exactly. Because I ain't surprised at Brett, man. He does come off as somebody who's unsophisticated. Probably doesn't even wipe his ass after he takes a shit.
Oh, damn. Yeah.
You know, that's what they were saying about Joel Ward, though. This is fucked up, man.
Now, we go from him being a pervert to a sociopath.
Yeah, for real. It just would have come off so much better if he'd used the line that old boy's brother used in the breakup. Like, yeah, listen, I want to get the both of y'all some Saran wrap. I want to wrap you up from head to toe. And then I'm gonna take a knife and I'm gonna cut two holes, one for your mouth, obviously, and then you know, he should have just done that. Anyway, not a lot of breakup fans on the podcast. Anyway,
was that one with Vince Vaughn?
Yes, it was his brother.
I don't remember that line.
It was the funniest shit in the movie, and they smacked him. One for your mouth, obviously. All right, next, get in, get out. Nick's favorite writer, Greg Doyle.
Oh God.
takes on everybody's favorite vagabond.
I'm gonna take a beating in this segment. This is brutal for me. Every top to bottom, this thing is brutal.
Takes on everybody's favorite vagabond, Coach Larry Brown, and just eviscerates him and SMU, basically saying that, you know, you wanted attention by hiring him, but it's the wrong attention. He's burned every bridge that he's ever had. He's petty. He's going to put him on probation, all that stuff. And listen, I'm not a fan of Greg Doyle, but I'm even less of a fan of Larry Brown. So I love the damn article. Nick, let's start it with you. What'd you think?
Oh, God. listen, it was honest, and it's true. And a lot of what he points out is very real about the NCAA and about Larry Brown and about the situation at SMU. You know, you hire a coach to get attention, to make a splash, and you do. Kids get screwed when coaches leave and new coaches come in, especially the higher the profile, the incoming coach, and the lower profile of the school, the more heads that roll. And it's not just kids, it's assistant coaches also, but he told the dude who'd been starting for 2 years to hit the bricks.
Yep.
Now, to be honest, that kid looks like he sucks. But that's not the point. That's not the point. The point is the dude gets minutes, and you could at least kept him on as a backup. Shit. Anytime a white point guard loses playing time, I always cry a tear. So this is just tough for me, man. Like
single Indian tear.
Just the one single Indian tear as I'm watching Larry Brown coach at Southern Methodist, and he's cutting a white point guard. It just feels like everything is wrong. I don't know, man. It's not a good look. And, you know, listen, will this team be well coached? Maybe. Maybe not. Will this team be any good? Probably not. It's SMU. Is Larry Brown going to bring in huge recruits? No. Are his recruiters talented? Maybe. But, like, that doesn't make a difference. The recruiting process for college basketball for next season is pretty much already over. Why are you cutting kids so late? It just is. It's ugly. And Doyle was right. He hit it on the head. It was bad on SMU's part. Larry just wants to be around basketball, so he's taking a job in Texas, of all places. And, you know, it's just brutal, man. And I wish him best of luck. I hope they do well. I like Larry Brown. I'm in the minority on this podcast that think he's a good coach. I know he's a good guy because he was good to me, but the situation doesn't look good for anybody, man. It doesn't look good for anybody.
Fuck him. He cheered for Villanova against Carolina in the Final Four in 2009. And then when we played Kansas this year, the fucker had on a Kansas shirt cheering for Kansas. Fuck him. And Dean, and if Dean were coherent enough, he'd say fuck him too. That was.
He's not though. So he just says.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. All right, Jahan, what you got?
Well, this goes to the one pet peeve that I have. That organizations, schools, when they just hire the damn retread, all right? Hire the coach because he used to be good, because he used to have a name, you know? And instead of doing the research, doing the work, and going out and getting the next great young coach. All right. This hire doesn't make any sense to me. All right. Larry Brown has never liked playing younger players, ever. All right. So young and these cats nowadays aren't going to come to SMU because Larry Brown is there. All right. He's 71 years old. Okay. You know, so move on. If you hired him as maybe a consultant or an overseer or something like that, then that's fine. But the day in, day out of being a coach again, no. And Larry Brown will probably forget more about basketball than I or anybody on this podcast will ever have. Don't get me wrong. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal basketball coach. We can never take that away from him, you know, but this is just a horrible, horrible hire.
All right, Che.
Before the hire, I saw Larry Brown on NBA TV as an analyst, and he had no energy. You realize that, damn, this motherfucker is 71 years old. And then I heard that he got the job at SMU, man. I'm just thinking to myself, man, like, the dude is bordering on being senile from how the way he was acting on NBA TV, man. And you can just see he's going to be the type who will nod off at practice. No, the assistant head coach is going to have to come in and run the
plays. I can't be a part of it.
Dog, listen, man, the man is 71 years old. I thought he looked tired on that podcast. I mean, on the NBA TV, man. I was worried about him. And then I heard he got a job. You know, I'm like, he got a job for real? You know, this shit doesn't make any sense, man. It was just based off name recognition. And who the fuck is going to want to play for Larry Brown at SMU basketball? I mean, the brand of basketball, let me got to be honest. There's the brand of basketball, SMU basketball, Texas Tech basketball. These are schools that the basketball traditions are just shit. And I don't think Larry Brown is going to make a difference. It's a horrible brand of basketball, but, you know, they had to do something, man. So I guess that's what will work for him.
Okay. All right. There we go. All right. Last get in, get out. Delmon Young, what's going on, bro? The hell's wrong with you? Delmon has been suspended for 7 games for what was termed an incident that led to Young's arrest in Manhattan on Friday morning on a hate crime charge. The story goes on Friday evening, several hours after the arrest. Oh, no. I'm sorry. According to New York police, early Friday morning, Young used an anti-Semitic slur against 4 men and tackled one of them. The episode occurred outside a hotel in New York where the Tigers had arrived hours earlier, Thursday evening, for their weekend series against the New York Yankees. Nick, doesn't he know that you can't attack Jews in New York?
You know, I think the worst part about this story is literally he checked in to the hotel. This is before the series. He checks into the hotel. He goes out and gets wasted. And he comes back and starts beating up some Jewish guy. Like, and the Jewish guy was giving money to a panhandler. Mm-hmm. So the dude is out here actively breaking stereotypes. And then you've got this other guy out here actively reinforcing them. And, you know, you wonder where all the anger comes from and why it's being directed at some young, you know, man of Judaism. And then you realize it's because all these pitchers have been throwing breaking balls to Delmon Young and Jewing down his average.
That was the payoff.
Clean this up, J-Hen, please.
I'm saying, if I drop a hat trick, all right, them honkies don't feel it. Okay?
Oh, man. Okay, since he refused to clean it up, Chi, please, I beg of thee.
You're asking the wrong person. I am from Crown Heights, Brooklyn, the place that is notorious for the riots that took place between African Americans and Jews back in 1991. So I reserve comment.
Hold on. So
you got a case. You got a case. You got a case.
Are you siding with Delmon Young?
You got a case. You think it's okay that Shlomo got rocked?
I say I ain't gonna say what he did was justified, but
I understand. What you understand.
All right, and on that bombshell, we will now close this episode of Fill in the Lanes.
Phillip's hiring. I need a new gig, man.
I mean, and Trill never even tried to get back on. Like, he was just, he just peaced out and was out.
He texted me.
I
said his
body checked him, fool. Straight
up. His computer's completely shut.
Icing my ass, all right? Body checking, fool. Where my skates at?
Blue Rip. Line, fool.
Rip.
You wasn't with me when I was shooting hat tricks in the gym. All right, again, it always gets like this. But hey, we came in at about an hour and a half, so mazel tov to go back to the Delman Young thing. All right, shout outs. Anybody got some?
Oh, man. I guess we should shout out. I want to shout out Steve, not Chad, for sending us an email. We got to get him on the show.
Yeah,
he sent us an email pleading his case to get on, and I got no beef with that. So I'm sure if you're listening now, happy to get you on. Who else do we hear? Then we got some weird emails from like T Best,
dude.
And Rick's getting hit up. People trying to get up on him and give him some work for NASCAR. We're happy about that.
Right, dude. Like I thought I you know what? I looked at some of those emails and I'm like, this sounds like a Nigerian scam. Like,
you didn't call me?
You
didn't call me? Let me know what's up.
You should have brought an expert.
Can you code this for me, Chief? No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry.
No, that's it. We're going to get you on. Who else? Jay Murder. I know he was tweeting out sad tweets the other day because we hadn't had him back on. Jay Murder, we'll get you back on, Jay. In Jawi Trust or Jago Sahard. What's he going by now?
Jelani.
Okay, Jelani. We're happy to have you on, brother. I don't always want to put people's government name out there. And then that's it, man. Follow me at Nick_Nohart and DM me, and I'll give you good tweets to use. You send me like $2,000, and we'll get all square. It's no big deal.
And he'll let you know about the betting stuff.
100%.
What about you, Chi?
Shout out to my wife for letting my black ass back into the house.
damn it.
Actually, I chose to come back.
Yeah, of course you right. did. Of course you did.
I chose to come back, all right.
Did you forget your jacket?
Yes, I did.
Sleeping on that bench was killing your back, wasn't it, Chief?
Cold game out there, bro. Cold game.
Okay.
Shit, I'm still sleeping on my side after being sleeping on that fucking couch.
He's like, you mean you're gonna run a credit check before I can get this apartment? I gotta go home.
That was a big ass dip and cheese couch, boy. For real.
Starbucks kicked him out, man, from doing podcasts back on the races.
He was in the movie theater, dude.
All right, go ahead. I'm sorry, Chico.
But yeah, man. You know, you can find me on Twitter @_BIGCHE.
All right. What about you, Jahen? Jahen? God damn it! Did I lose everybody?
So, yeah. Shout out. You can find me at Dr. HENRY 1911. It's at Dr. Henry 1911.
All right. As for myself, let me get shout outs to obviously All Balls Don't Bounce. Will Strickland, Will Street, Wall Street Strickland also has a NBA podcast one-on-one on the TSN network up in Canada. So him and Sweets Watson's have that. So y'all should check that out. Obviously, the Black Guy Who Tips, Rodmus, always showing love. Hot Fire Starters, Ba, TK, good looking out for you guys. As far as myself, yo, man, I'm just trying to get this move happening. Got the practice sold. The junk man's coming tomorrow. Damn, dude's buying all the equipment on Thursday, and then I'm out this bitch. So, Atlanta, here I come.
Right, yes, sir.
Right. Oh, hey, Rick, one more shout-out, man. One more shout-out. My bad.
Yeah. We didn't hear your first ones anyway.
Okay, good shit. Terrence Brown, 56. You know what I'm saying? Loyal listener, dude. Terrence Brown, 56.
Yeah, and everybody also go check out The Avengers. I mean, it's a good movie. It's a really, really good movie.
I'm getting off. Bye.
Breakfast Pride, Bruce 11. Yeah, we got a bunch of fans out there to support us, man. We appreciate you guys. Don Filarente.
Yes. And we are going to try to do more fan interaction, or I'm sorry, I hate fan, listener interactions. Yeah. Just got to figure out a way to do it. So we haven't forgotten about y'all. So anyway, for Trill and his whack-ass internet service and his badass back, for the rest of the dudes that stuck through it, we appreciate y'all. I'm Rick. This has been Filling the Lanes. As always, free Ed Coda.
Chevy, Beamers, and minivans, over 600 cars, trucks, SUVs. Are you listening, man? Let Eastern Motors put you in a car today. Let Eastern Motors finance it all the way.